You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. Whoa, oh, oh, oh.
The Punt Podcast, in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One. It's 17 to 10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Right, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to the Punt Podcast here at William Hill. Alex Dunn in the presenter's chair on this edition, looking ahead to a super Saturday of action in the Premier League. Also got a couple of games on Sunday to look forward to. Plenty to get our teeth stuck into, so we'll waste no time and we'll start by introducing Mr. Derek McGovern. Good morning to you, Derek.
Good morning, Alex. How are you? All right?
I'm good, and I imagine you're pretty cock-a-hoop off the back of the Champions League exploits, I should say, of Liverpool last night.
Yeah, fantastic result. Didn't expect that at all. I fully expected a City victory, actually, and I was almost prepared to back it until I saw that team sheet handed in by Pep Guardiola, and then all of a sudden I looked and I thought, there's no danger there. And so I saved my money, and what a great night it was.
And also on the line, a man who won't be cock-a-hoop this evening when Arsenal plod their way to a 2-0 win against CSKA Moscow. It's Andy Excel. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, how are you?
Yes, all good, all good. Last night's game, Andy, incredible, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was incredible. Well, it was, but a lot of people seem to be calling it, and I just couldn't see it. I was a bit like Derek. I was thinking, that what are they all talking about? But that's what Liverpool can do in half an hour. They can just, offensively, they can blow people away, and that's what happened.
Yeah, and as you said, Man City, it was strange. I've actually just read something on Twitter, Derek. Jonathan Liu has just tweeted out that Man City have failed to score in those four games this season, and the only player to have started in all four of those games was Ilkay Gundogan, which is interesting. Might not mean anything,
it's very interesting. With his name on the team sheet, I mentioned earlier, I saw that City team sheet, and my confidence in Liverpool grew, and that was principally his name. He comes with a big reputation, and he does get great reviews, but to me, he's another Mesut Ozil. His reputation goes to, I don't understand why he's so highly rated. And I thought Pep Guardiola, it was a damaging result for City last night, but it could be even more damaging long term, because if I was a City player, I mean, maybe I'm overreacting here, but if I was a City player and I saw the manager who's been lauded to the skies pick the team he picked last night, I'd be having doubts about my manager in a big game, the game that's going to define their season. His team sheet was as responsible for that defeat as Liverpool's performance.
Mm. They just seemed unbalanced throughout, really, didn't they?
They looked awful. The thing is, I don't think the tie is over, because Liverpool didn't have to do anything last night to beat City 3-0. They were nothing special, Liverpool. I don't remember a single shot they had on target other than the three goals. I think they had three shots and they all went in. And City were terrible. There's a long way to go yet in this tie. It really is.
Yeah, and we'll have a little more on that, of course, next week, looking ahead to the Champions League action. But we've got massive games on Saturday featuring both Liverpool and Manchester City in their respective derbies. So we'll dive straight into the action, and we start at Goodison Park. Everton against Liverpool. Everton 16-5, the draw is 13-5. Liverpool in the betting at 5-6 as we record this on Thursday morning. Everton have only won one of the last 22 league meetings with Liverpool. There have been 21 red cards as well in the Premier League between these two sides. That is a league high. Could be in for a feisty affair once again here with Sam Allardyce at the helm. What do you make of it, Derek?
Well, no, I don't think so at all. All those red cards, I don't think there's been any in the last few meetings. It seems to have died down, all the certain red card bets in this game. In fact, I actually think this match has drab draw written all over it. And as far as I'm aware, drab draws pay the same price as exciting ones, 13-5 in this case. Four of the last five Premier League matches at Goodison between these two have finished all square. And Liverpool, it's like we've got this game, a Merseyside derby, and then later on in the afternoon, we've got a Manchester derby. Now, when the broadcasters were picking this live coverage, picking these games, they must have thought, what a Saturday that's going to be. But there's nothing at stake. Is the City going to win the league, whether they win it on Saturday or not? It doesn't matter against United. And Liverpool have bigger fish to fry than their Merseyside neighbours. So it's the damn squibs, as far as I'm concerned, which I'd never thought I would ever say that in a Merseyside derby. The only thing I like looking at in a game, like, you know, when Liverpool play Everton, is Sam Allardyce, the demeanour and the boat race of Sam Allardyce. Because apart from Roy Hodgson, when he pitched up at Anfield, I don't think there's ever been a manager so out of place as Allardyce at Everton. The Everton fans hate him. He defied the odds by keeping Palace up, and defied even more insurmountable odds by chewing gum ostentatiously in his 60s without triggering ridicule. I mean, he's just disgusting to look at, and his teams are disgusting to look at as well. He turned Everton into the school of science fiction, and I think every Evertonian, even those who applauded his appointment, will be whooping with delight when he goes at the end of the season, and he will go at the end of the season. He's taken Everton into ninth in the Premier League, which is ridiculous. Shows you how bad the Premier League is if Everton are ninth. This is a game that's got nothing at stake in my eyes. Both sides will be happy with a draw. Liverpool are looking ahead to next Tuesday night at City. I don't know where Everton are looking. This has got nailed on draw, this one.
Okay. Andy, do you think Liverpool could actually rest a few players for this one? I know it sounds silly, but they do have a bigger game, supposedly, on Tuesday night.
Well, it's entirely possible. What do they want? They've got to be looking at next week. They probably took a bit out of themselves, some of those players yesterday, particularly in midfield as well. So you wouldn't be surprised if some of those are rested and there's a bit of rotation going on, maybe at full-back as well, because they did plenty of work, that's for sure. I'm kind of with Derek. The other thing that I've looked at in the last few games, there's been a few penalties. So I'm with Derek on the red card thing. That's died away, but penalties haven't. And there's a few defenders that you wouldn't be surprised if they gave a penalty away, particularly on the Everton side. So I think a penalty in the game might be worth looking at. But yeah, a score draw. I'm not so drab, but a score draw for me.
Okay, so both find it hard to split the two sides. As you heard, the draw 13-5. Both teams to score in a draw is 16-5. And as ever, we've got enhanced odds. A goal to be scored in the first 15 minutes, pushed out from 2-1 to 5-2. 7-2 for Wayne Rooney to score any time. And Liverpool to win both halves, we've pushed out from 7-2 to 9-2. And that is the Merseyside derby coming up on Saturday at lunchtime. As for Saturday tea time, we've got the Manchester derby. Man City against Manchester United. And if Man City win, they win the league. And if they win on this occasion, they'll win the league with more games to spare than any other side in Premier League history. They're 10-11. The draw is 13-5. Man United are 3-1. I suppose the big question, Andy, is will Man City's hopes of winning the title against their neighbours, I mean, this has been mooted now for months, hasn't it? Do you think the celebrations will be slightly dampened by what happened last night and what could happen next Tuesday?
No, I think they'd be more than happy to win this game and win the title. It's just a matter of, again, it's what team are they going to put out? Because they know they're going to win the league. What sort of team will they put out? Guardiola traditionally doesn't rest an awful lot, and I think they'll really, really want to wrap this up. One way or the other, there's a big price out here. It's either Man City, who are so much better than Man United and should beat them, or if they're going to rest or not have their eye on this game, then United are a big price away. To be honest, I can't quite fathom it out after last night. Before last night, I was very strong on City. But now I want to see how they bounce back. I think they probably will, but I can't get involved enough to have a bet now. I'm really in confused state over this game.
I've not actually, I didn't see the market prior to that. Have Man City drifted out off the back of that defeat?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Enhanced odds in this. Both teams to score in the first half, pushed out from 7-2 to 4-1. Man City to win both halves, pushed out from 4s to 5s. And Man United to win to nil, pushed out from 11-2 to 7-1. Derek, we're not going to talk too much about buses on this podcast because there's been a fair bit of bus-related action in the last 24 hours. But Man U typically park the bus in games like this. Do you think we'll see that in this one?
Yeah, I do. It's Jose Mourinho's MO, isn't it, in matches like this? He'll park the bus. And one thing, his number one priority going to this game is don't let City win the title against us. That's what every Man United fan, be wherever they live, Surrey or Thailand, most of them, that's what they'll all be praying. And he'll go there and do a job. And I don't think City will try that hard to break him down. They won't want to lose, obviously, against their big rivals. But this to me is like, yeah, we'll play out a draw. This, it's like an Italy match, this game, an Italian league match. Both sides will be delighted with the draw. City have got bigger fish to fry. They've already won the league. We know that. Doesn't matter what they get against on Saturday. They've got Liverpool, a 3-0 deficit to make up at the Etihad next week. And that's the only thing on their minds. It would be, it's natural. It's got to be a draw there. I just don't see any other. It could actually be a 0-0 draw. I'm pretty sure City will rotate. But United will go there, keep things tight. And the longer it goes, that 0-0, the more likely it will be that it will be a 0-0. It gets to 65 minutes 0-0, and then both sides will think, yeah, this will do us.
See, it's interesting because I started this podcast full of, joy and thinking that there'd be two great derbies at the weekend. And Derek, you've basically put up a 0-0 double, haven't you, in the two derby games? Did you really think it's going to be like that?
I wouldn't put out. I've got this mad theory, and I've never ever articulated it. But sometimes, and it happens about twice a season, there'll come a Premier League Saturday when you'll see like five or six matches ending 0-0. There's always one every season. I always think it's almost like an illness that sweeps through the Premier League. They hear at half-time other matches, oh, they're all 0-0 as well. We'll play for a 0-0, no harm done. It's probably madness what I'm saying here. But I've seen it two or three times over the last 4 or 5 years. You'll get an inordinate number of 0-0 draws on the same afternoon. And this could be that weekend. I wouldn't put anybody off putting a little pound accumulator or whatever on a few 0-0 draws. And yes, there's good reasons for thinking these games will be drab because there's nothing in them. I mean, you talk about local bragging rights, but Liverpool fans won't mind losing against Everton at the weekend if they go through on Tuesday night. Honestly, they won't. And the same with City. They won't mind. They won't mind losing to Man United if they get through against Liverpool the next week. It's the derbies are spectacularly ill-timed.
And particularly for Man United, Andy, it's almost a lose-lose, really. Even if they do manage to win, then they're just delaying the inevitable, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's more with United, it's the same old debate week in, week out. It's the style they do it in. Now, if they went and really went at them, which would be so against the manager's MO, then that would change things. If they just absolutely went at them like Liverpool did and showed, then the fans might think, hold on, we could do this a bit more. But you just don't see it happen. I'm not as doom and gloom as Derek. I think they actually will be pretty good games. But, it's more about style with United, and that's Mourinho's problem there, and always will be. Results, regardless, it's what style they play in. That'll always be his problem there until the day he leaves.
OK, so a draw for Derek. And Andy, if you were going to put a bet up, what would it be?
In this game, I think City will still win,
OK.
So I think the price is all right there.
Yeah. Fair enough. Man City, the selection for Andy in the Manchester derby. We'll turn our attention then to Sunday's action. And lo and behold, we've got another game featuring a team whose eyes are probably elsewhere. Arsenal 11-20 as we record this to beat Southampton. The draw is 16-5. Southampton are 9-2. And we're recording this prior to Arsenal against CSKA Moscow on Thursday night. There's enhanced odds. Arsenal to win by 3 or more goals, pushed out from 7-2 to 9-2. Southampton to score in both halves, pushed out from 9-2 to 11-2. Derek, we'll start with you here. Arsenal have actually won a fair few games recently. That's because this game will be their fifth consecutive home game in a row, which is pretty unprecedented. And they are typically a lot better at home. Well, no, let's face it, they're just rubbish away. But they have been picking up wins, and they come up against the Southampton side who just can't seem to do anything right, no matter who's in charge.
Yeah, they look shocking, and that result for Southampton last week was beyond the pale for them. That was a performance from the side, from a group of players that looked as though they didn't care whether they stayed up or not. It was a shocking performance by them. The thing you say about Arsenal, the more interesting thing is how many will turn up. If Arsenal have a bad result against Moscow on Thursday night, how many will turn up for this game, given the number of empty seats we've seen at the Emirates in recent home games against opposition like this? Arsene Wenger, the manager, be making all kinds of excuses. It was Easter, it was Mother's Day, it was the Peace from the East. But, you know, the fans are voting with their feet and Arsenal are not great to watch now. But they get the job done at home. They've won more home games than Liverpool, than Tottenham, than Chelsea. Quite remarkable considering they're so far adrift in sixth place. And they'll beat Southampton here. It's actually, I never thought I'd say this, but Arsenal are odds on. Here is a very, very good bet. No matter what happens on Thursday night, Arsenal will beat Southampton on Sunday.
Okay. What about you then, Andy? You are an Arsenal fan. Worth noting as well, Mark Hughes has beaten Arsenal already this season, but he hasn't beaten many teams. That was early on in the season when he was Stoke boss. That was at home. But I'm with Derek here. I think it's really hard to look past an Arsenal win, even though the price is normally one that you'd be looking to avoid.
Southampton have given Arsenal a few problems in the past, but I'm with Derek here, even though I don't expect it to be a vintage Arsenal home performance, probably in a less than totally populated ground with a less than totally populated first team. I think that I still think they'll find a way to win it, but it'll be close. I think Southampton have... they've got to show their care at some point. They really have. And I really see teams like Southampton and Stoke and see players in it who have no investment in the club. They don't care if they go down. Because they know they'll get they've got to get out clause somewhere. They'll get a move. They'll get back into a good team and they'll be all right. And they're just not bothered about playing for their current team. And recruitment people really need to look at mentality of players these days more than anything else.
Yeah. No, I think I'd agree with you on that. So it's going to be comfortable Arsenal win. Are we just going to go on the outrights, gents, or are we going to go a bit more adventurous? Maybe handicap betting. Arsenal minus a goal is 11-8. Minus two is 7-2. That, of course, would have landed against Stoke last weekend, although they left it late, didn't they?
The minus one at 11-8 looks good. I mean, Southampton's away form. I mean, they've actually drawn a few games, drawn six of their 15 away from home, but they've only won two, you know, yeah. And I can't believe how bad they were. This is the side they were in 18th place with a new manager. Everything suggested this should be a battling Southampton performance, but it was anything but. And if they can perform like that last week in a big game against, you know, side near the bottom with them, how are they going to raise the game for Arsenal away? It ain't going to happen.
Okay. The final game that we're going to focus on in depth comes on Sunday at 4:30, and it's Chelsea against West Ham. Chelsea are 2-7. The draw is 4-1. West Ham are 11-1. At least, Andy, these are two sides who have to focus on the league because they've got nothing else to look at. Willian to score first, pushed out from 4s to 11-2. Both teams to score in the first half, pushed out from 5s to 6-1. Enhanced odds on the William Hill website. And don't forget, all of the televised games are hashtag your odds games as well. So do get stuck in if there's something that you fancy. I have to say, Andy, you could not make me back Chelsea at 2-7 in this, no matter how bad West Ham are.
Yeah, they've been all right at home and they have put in some good performances at home. But every time we talk about Chelsea, I've just said mentality, mentality, mentality. And it's, what is their mentality going into this game? I think there's been players all season looking at the World Cup and a possible move beyond that. And I'm still worried that's the case here. So I'm never going to get involved with them at a short price. Having the on the flip side, I think West Ham are starting to find something. There is something coming out of there now, and I think the momentum is beginning to build for them. So I think they're all right at this price. I might have a little sniff around them at a double-figure price.
Yeah, 11-1 certainly looks big enough. West Ham last did the double over Chelsea in the 2002-03 season, and that was the season they were relegated. And, of course, they have already beaten them once this season. Could we see a double, Derek?
We could do. 11-1 is overpriced because everything you say about Chelsea, they're a team that you want to oppose at all costs at the moment. Nothing to play for in the league. Manager's going to be on his bike come the summer. Quite a few of the players seem as though they will be too. 2-7 is probably just quite possibly the worst price in history for Chelsea in this game. I might even back it. It's that bad. No, West Ham on 11-1. I mean, they're playing away from home as well. And people could go on about West Ham hating their stadium, but their home record isn't that bad. I think they've won 6 home games this season, so it isn't that bad. There was talk about them playing, if there was any trouble at the last game, they'd have to play their future fixtures behind closed doors. That was at the request of West Ham fans, I think, after one or two of their performances. But I like them here at 11-1. They're showing something under David Moyes. I mean, he has his critics, Moyes, doesn't he? But let's not forget that he matched his predecessor at Old Trafford, Fergie, in knocking a giant club off their perch. Unfortunately, it was Man United he knocked off. I'm going to go for West Ham here, 11-1. I think it's too big because Chelsea right now look there for the taking.
And Chelsea have lost 5 of the last 7 Premier League games. That's as many games as they lost in the entire of last season, when, of course, they won the league. So certainly going the wrong way at the minute. And so you're both a West Ham here. Would you take them to win, Andy, or would you be looking slightly more conservative?
I think plus 2 goals is not a bad price. Look, I can't remember what the price it was.
10 to 11 it is. 10 to 11.
Yeah, that's what I thought, somewhere around even money. And they haven't lost by 2 goals to Chelsea in most of the previous matchups. So I might have a look at that, or, like I say, I may even, if I'm brave, go for the 11-1.
Yeah. Okay, then, good stuff. Let's move on to Naps then, and, well, we'll talk about the other games in the Premier League as well. I mean, Derek's already said that there may not be many goals. We've got Bournemouth Palace, Brighton Huddersfield, Leicester Newcastle, Stoke Tottenham, Watford Burnley and West Brom Swansea, all Saturday 3 o'clock kickoffs. Is there anything standing out for you there, Mr McGovern?
It's a tough, tough set of fixtures, this. It really is. But I'm going to steal one before Andy gets in there, because I know what he's looking at now. Burnley at 23-10 to win at Watford. That's the one for me. It's not the greatest. Slim pickings this weekend.
Yeah.
But that'll do for me.
Okay. What about you, Andy?
He hasn't stolen it off me. I wasn't going there. Leicester at home to Newcastle. They've won the last 5 meetings between the two teams. I just think they're a much better side than them, and they will beat them.
Okay, I think I'm right in saying Newcastle have only scored once at the King Power as well in 5 meetings there. That was back on Boxing Day many, many moons ago. So Leicester the nap for Andy. And my nap on behalf of Dave Kellner, I'm going to go with both teams to score and over 2.5 goals in the Bournemouth Palace game at 23-20. We've seen Bournemouth score plenty at home and let in plenty as well. And Palace have got enough about them to notch a few as well. So I think that'll actually be the entertaining game of the weekend. So I'll take that at a nice enough price at 23-20. Is worth noting as well, if you cast your mind back, listeners, to last week's podcast, obviously there's Dave Kellner, who normally sits in my seat, and we've got Derek and Andy, Sam Norris on the European front, Pete Farries, Gav Puchalowski and Al Ross covering the Football League. And they'll all be coming up a little bit later on this podcast. Last week, gents, 6 out of 7 winning naps. The loser... Derek?
I knew you were going to say Derek. I knew the next word was going to be Derek out of your mouth.
What have you got to say for yourself?
What's he doing against Liverpool as well?
I don't think there's ever been a clean sweep of winning naps on this podcast. Not since
not while I've been on.
Certainly not since it expanded to cover 7 naps, but... Yeah. Not bad going.
I'll let this side down.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably someone out there who had a pound on all of them in some kind of acco. And I think you had Palace, didn't you, at 5-1, so...
Well, in my defence, it was probably a moral victory. See if the bookies will pay out on a moral victory. You know, you never know, you might do.
Doubt it, yeah. Anyway, we'll try and bounce back this week. Thank you very much, Mr. XL.
Pleasure.
Derek, if you stay on the line, we've got James Ducker from The Telegraph. Hopefully... popping along in just a few moments. I know he's got a rather busy day. I'm going to try and get in touch with him now, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Schalke get the votes again this week, having landed a 2-0 victory against Freiburg last weekend. They now face Hamburg, who are still a long way from safety at the foot of the table. Schalke shouldn't be even money this weekend. It's second versus bottom. It's the form team in the league taking on a side who look booked for relegation. And even money available for Schalke, in my opinion, should be gobbled up. Last week's win extended their winning run to 6 games in the Bundesliga, and they've kept the opposition out in their last 5 as well. That does point towards Schalke win to nil at 19-10, which is of serious interest this week against the Hamburg side, who are without a league win now since November. Despite getting a respectable point against informed Stuttgart last weekend, I don't really give them a prayer against Schalke, who are 4 points clear of Dortmund in the race for second now and looking to cement their place in next season's Champions League, so it's not as if they have nothing to play for. If anything, they could be more motivated for this one compared to a Hamburg side who could be resigned to their fate, knowing they're still 7 points from safety. Schalke at even money is a strong fancy this week. Win to nil at 19-10 is there too for the more ambitious, but Schalke to win the game outright gets the nap vote this week at even money.
Now, I promised that we'd be hearing from James Ducker from The Telegraph, but haven't been able to get in touch with him today, unfortunately. He's got a rather important interview with a... what should we call him? A mystery footballer? Anyway, he's a very important footballer, and frankly, if I was James Ducker, I'd rather be speaking to him than myself and Derek as well. I don't think we hold a grudge, do we, Derek, in the slightest?
No, not at all. But Ducker by name, Ducker by nature. Yeah.
Well, there you go. Now, fingers crossed, I'll endeavour to try and get in touch with him later in the day, but if you don't hear James Ducker's dulcet tones on this podcast, I'm sure that he will be along in future editions anyway. I know he was at Anfield last night, and obviously he's got plenty on at the minute, covering Manchester clubs. It's probably the busiest week of his season as well. So hopefully you'll hear from him later. But if not, he will be along at some point on another podcast. But for the meantime, you're left with just myself and Derek. But now that Andy's gone...
Hey.
Shall we talk about him? No. We are going to talk about Dele Alli, though, who is a player who is very much dividing opinion. And he has divided opinion now for a little while, because there's some people within the game who think he's absolutely fantastic. Some that have been particularly frustrated with his form this season. Some that like the edge that he's got, and some that don't in the slightest. First up, Dele Alli, Derek. Where do you stand?
Well, on his windpipe, with a bit of luck. I think he's another player with a vastly, who's been vastly overrated. And he's suddenly come into prominence, of course, because of his two goals last week in a rather important game. Yeah, and they were both good goals. The first one was an absolute peach, no doubt about it. Well, again, it's another example of goals distorting things. Are we to forget, because he scored those two goals at the weekend, the 6 months that went before, it's 6 months of mediocrity? No, I don't forget that. He's been hugely hyped because of a good season last season with one or two good goals. He hasn't lived up to that. He's been left out by Gareth Southgate from the starting lineup for England, rightly so in my opinion. I don't think he's anything special, Dele Alli. Now, the goal, you might say, well, what about that goal he scored last weekend? Well, it was a tremendous goal, but every Premier League footballer should have that kind of goal in the locker. You know what I mean? It wasn't anything that you wouldn't expect another Premier League player to score. Spurs fans are going to go nuts over that, but I just don't see anything special in Dele Alli. And in my eyes, he gives the ball away too much. And one other point about Dele Alli is that if he plays for England at the World Cup, I guarantee you'll be sent off for diving at one stage, because that's just the way he is. And people say you've got to knock out of this game. Well, he ain't going to, because that's just the way he plays now. And you might say, well, all foreign players dive, but not as extravagantly or as often as Dele Alli. And it just sticks in my craw, if I knew where my craw was. I can't have Dele Alli, I'm afraid. I think he's hugely, hugely overrated. In fact, he's the modern-day David Beckham.
You think? You say... I like watching him play because he's intelligent enough on a football pitch to get in the right areas. But I'm with you on the diving thing, by the way, because he's not even that good at it. I wouldn't mind if he was winning things left, right and centre. He's getting booked more often than he's winning things.
Exactly. He's been booked. Well, the latest booking was by Jacques Cousteau, I think. He's so much.
Well, you mentioned, obviously, he got that brace against Chelsea, and we've said that goal was fantastic, the first one, and it was. So let's not... We're not glossing over that by any means, listeners. It was a great goal. Before that, he scored at Bournemouth on the 11th of March. But then there's, if you're working back through his games, previous goal was on the 2nd of January. Now, Spurs have played a lot of games since then, and he started in most of them, barring the FA Cup replays against Rochdale and Newport. I would expect, as a number 10, his goal scoring record has to be better, because he hasn't really been doing that much in open play and creating chances, or at least certainly not as much as he did last year.
No, and I said six months or so ago, Dele Alli gets all the praise and all the adulation from the media. But the two players that Spurs, apart from Harry Kane, obviously, the two players that make Spurs tick are Christian Eriksen and Heung-Min Son. And it's only now that they're getting the acclaim that's being levelled at Alli. They are far more important to Spurs, in my eyes, than Dele Alli. And I know the manager, Mauricio Pochettino, has praised, you know, Alli up to the skies, you know, best player of his age in Europe. But you expect a manager to say that. When a player is off his game, he wants to put an arm around his shoulder. He wants his confidence boosted. So Pochettino's got to say that kind of thing. I really don't think he believes that. Ali has been very, very ordinary this season. And another thing that annoys me is that you can't watch a Spurs game with Ali on the ball. The commentator just can't call him Ali, as he'd say Ericsson or Son. He always has to say Dele Ali. Why is that? Is that his name? Is that his surname? Why is he never called Ali? It's always Dele Ali by commentators.
Yeah, I don't know, actually, because he's got Dele on the back of his shirt, hasn't he? So
yeah, but Sergio Aguero has Kun on the back of his
that's
shirt.
That's true, yeah. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't understand. It's a mystery. I'll have to find that one out.
Yeah, but he's... You touched on the England debate. Now, I think England have been really good in the two games that he hasn't played because they've found a system that works for players that they have. He just doesn't fit into that system, does he?
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. He's too wasteful in my eye. He gives the ball away too much. That's one thing you can't do in international football. England have been okay. People are jumping on a bandwagon after beating Holland and drawing with Italy. That was the result, wasn't it? You know, it's madness, absolute madness. There are two teams who aren't even at the World Cup. But you know, they've given in those friendlies, England gave hope that they might get out of the group. And before that, even with Panama in the group, I didn't think they would.
Okay, just going back to Ali then. He's only 21. Is there time for him to not necessarily change the way that he plays? But we have seen with other players who have blossomed early. I'm thinking Wayne Rooney for one. When he burst on the scene, obviously, he was an out-and-out striker and he gradually moved further and further back. Can you see Ali changing the way that he plays? Because he's only ever really been played in that number 10 role for Spurs. They've played him in central midfield a couple of times, but he's arguably considerably less effective there.
Well, I suppose in a way he's handicapped, because if you had to pick a number 10 at Spurs, I'd be picking Eriksen all day, every day.
Yeah.
Eriksen is a superior player in every aspect. So it's difficult to know exactly where to play Ali, because I'm not sure whether he's a central midfielder. I don't think he's defensively great. So you can't really play him in central midfield. That was the accusation leveled at Steven Gerrard by Rafa Benitez, which is why he was shunted out to the right. So it is difficult, because you've got a player there already who's playing in the position that Ali covets probably. So it's difficult. I don't know. You know, he's a Premier League footballer. He's only 21 years old. So he can do, of course he could change if the manager wants him to. But whether he will, I don't know. And it's just, he's one of those players that I will struggle always to give him praise, because he stands for everything bad in the game. Or in fact, he doesn't stand. He falls for everything bad in the game. All this, the diving culture, it's ruining football. And he's one of the main culprits.
Hmm. Interesting. I will just say, we've got a market on players to make England's World Cup squad, and it's interesting that Dele Alli is the joint second favourite to go. Now, I know they're ludicrous prices. I mean, Harry Kane's 50-1 on, and then Alli is 33-1 on with Kyle Walker, Raheem Sterling. Basically, what you've got there is England's three most important players and a player who's not, as it stands, going to even get in the team. Is that a sign, perhaps, of just how highly the media think of him?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, for all season long, he's an Englishman who plays for a London club. So the writers are going to go mad about him. We've seen it all with Jack Wilshere. I mean, Jack Wilshere couldn't get a game for Bournemouth. He comes back to Arsenal, plays two half-decent games, and now he's got to go to Russia. If you played for someone like, I don't know, Burnley, he wouldn't be getting a mention. Mm. But Dele Alli will go, injuries permitting. For fitness permitting, rather, he will go. Of course, he'll go. But right now, I don't see him starting the opening group game against Tunisia, I think it is, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. Okay. And, of course, we'll be interesting to see how Dele Alli gets on against Stoke at the weekend. It'd be just typical for him to bag a hat-trick now, wouldn't it? But
I've had the same argument about Salah. It doesn't matter to me, goals. It doesn't matter. I mean, he could bag a hat-trick. And everyone say, McGovern, you don't know what you're talking about. It won't be the first time. But I'm more interested in his performance. It's the same with Salah. I watch a Liverpool game and I want to see Salah perform well. Goals gloss over bad performances. And that's happened for Salah numerous occasions this season. I know I'm banging the drum and I'm in the minority of one, but I'm sticking to my guns.
So it's interesting that, because just in the 5-minute break that we had between recording the previews for the weekend's action and this little chat, I popped out into the office and Dave Kellner is there today. He's doing some TV work. God help anyone with eyes. And he was saying that he went, "Oh, did Derek mention Salah?" And I went, "Do you know what? Actually, we didn't mention him once when we were doing the previews." And he just went, "Oh, just because he's always said he was rubbish, and now he's got however many goals." And it's interesting that you brought him up there. I didn't.
Well, you know, I'll tell you the reason I brought him up, because I was watching the game last night, the City game, and Salah hadn't put a foot right, and then he scored the goal, which you and I could have put in. And all of a sudden, I got all kinds of texts from mates. You know, you don't know what you're talking about. Salah, brilliant, or why? Yeah, I mean, he scored a goal. Anybody could have scored. All right, he was in the right place at the right time. But I'm guaranteeing you this. He's having a Clive Allen season. Clive Allen scored 48, 49 goals, I think it was, the Spurs in the late 80s. Right? Spurs won nothing that season, by the way. Despite all the goals he scored, they won nothing that season. The following season, he was sent on loan to some bog-standard French club. I'm not saying that will happen to Salah, but I guarantee you we won't be hearing that much about him next season.
Interesting. And as for Ali, 10 goals in the 15-16 season in the Premier League, 18 in the 16-17 season, just 8 so far this season. That's including the brace at the weekend. So even if you were going on goals, it's not been a stellar season by any means for the Spurs man. Well, I'm delighted to say that we have now been joined by James Ducker from The Telegraph. James, good afternoon to you.
Better late than never, Alex, I think. Or maybe not.
No, well...
Maybe people will listen to this and wish I'd stayed away.
We shall see. No, it's been... you've had a busy morning interviewing mystery players.
Busy season... Busy week after week, really, with Manchester.
That is true.
A particularly busy spell over this sort of 10-day period.
Yes, well, I've just been speaking to Mr. McGovern, so you've actually been spared talking about Dele Alli, and we can just focus on the Manchester clubs.
Right, okay.
You were there last night, weren't you, at Anfield?
I was, yeah.
What was it like? Because on TV it looked like, and I know that it's the most widely used cliche in football, you know, the European night at Anfield atmosphere, but it did look to be absolutely bouncing. Of course, the fans before the game and the Man City bus, nobody wants to see that, but inside the ground it seemed pretty raucous.
Yeah, well, I mean, cliches exist for things that are often true, and you know, Anfield is I've covered a lot of football matches, and you know, I think sort of some of the best games I've covered in terms of atmosphere and occasion have been sort of late stage Champions League knockout ties at Anfield with Liverpool. It is a special ground, and it is a special atmosphere, and it is a special set of supporters. And you know, they were we're talking cliches, but they absolutely were. They're sort of the 12th man for their team last night, and you could see the huge lift it gave the Liverpool players. And at the same time, you know, I saw players, the City players that I've very, very rarely seen panicked or cowered on the ball, actually looking pretty intimidated, if not intimidated, and certainly unnerved and a little taken aback by the occasion. I mean, you maybe expect the Jesuses and the Laportes, who are, you know, new to something like that, to be, you know, startled by it. But you know, even the David Silvers, you know, I mean, he lost possession more in the first sort of 15 minutes than I've seen from him pretty much all season. So,
yeah.
You know, it's a good example of what a galvanising effect it can have. And I mean, there's a lot of talk about the sort of weight of history, you know, going into that game. And Guardiola himself talks about it a lot, that the Bayern Munichs, the Barcelonas, the Liverpools, the Man Uniteds, the Real Madrids, you know, they have that weight of history behind them, and history matters, and I think it does. And yeah, it's a while since Liverpool, you know, 2005, since they won it, 2006, since they were in the final, 2007, I think, maybe since the final. But you know, it felt like one of those sort of, it felt like this was the latest in a long line of great European nights. And I was there at Anfield in 2005, semi-final against Chelsea. I don't think anything would top that for atmosphere for me. I still think that superseded last night and a lot of other games have been at. But, you know, it was absolutely electric. And obviously there's been changes to that stadium, obviously huge new stand, and they've reconfigured it, but it still comes alive on those occasions.
You mentioned David Silva losing the ball. I think you can count on one hand the amount of times he actually got into what you would call the David Silva pocket, if you like, where he always seems to pick the ball up. I can only think of a couple of occasions where he was actually effective doing what we know he can do.
Yeah, I mean, there were worse players than him, but that's not really saying a great deal because they were just so disappointing to a man. But yeah, I mean, I think the one thing you generally always get from David Silva is composure, calmness. You know, when everyone else is losing their heads, he keeps his. He sort of operates in this sort of near state of permanent serenity, but he looked as flustered as anyone really last night. And I mean, I they did not play well. They just did not play well as a team. I think Liverpool's intensity and the way that they came at them really disorientated them, and they were obviously rocked by three goals in the first half an hour. But I looked at the setup, and I still now I'm struggling to understand what Pep Guardiola was trying to achieve. They have had a very, very tried and trusted system this season, 4-3-3, which is very fluid. People, you can change your players. You know, people can come into that system, but the system has stayed broadly the same, and it's worked a treat. And yet, last night they changed to what was sort of loosely a 4-2-3-1. With Ilkay Gundogan, who's a central midfielder, stuck out on the right flank, looked completely lost, was hopeless. And, you know, but it also had a destabilising effect on Silva, De Bruyne, Fernandinho. Sane, I thought, was the most proactive of the City attackers. But again, he sort of was an isolated threat. Less said about Gabriel Jesus, the better. And I just think he got it wrong. I just think Guardiola got it wrong on the night. And I'm not saying that if it played 4-3-3, that it would have been perfect. You know, you can have off nights, but yeah. But if he didn't want to play Raheem Sterling for whatever reason, you know, Sterling has had some difficult games and poor performances at Anfield since he left Liverpool. Then stick with the system. Maybe put Bernardo Silva in there. But don't make it lopsided.
No, I think that's the thing.
And he talked so much in the build-up about we don't change. Well, they did change, he likes a midfielder, but it just seemed like it was like, all right, we'll shove a load of midfielders on the pitch, and they didn't. Gundogan certainly didn't seem to know what was expected of him in that position.
No, it's a big enough game to take that kind of risk as well, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I'm saying this, and I feel like in some ways it detracts from what Liverpool did, because the way Liverpool played, they may well have won the game regardless. You know, they looked hungrier, they looked more intense, they look more cohesive, they look more organised, and they have players who rose to the occasion. And I don't just mean the front three in this occasion, who were very good, but I mean Milner and Henderson were absolutely outstanding in the midfield, important goal-scoring contribution from Oxlade-Chamberlain. But the two full-backs, I mean, for a 19-year-old in Trent Alexander-Arnold to produce a performance of that calibre,
yeah.
I think I'd said it was a sort of a coming of age performance from him. I think it was. Initially, he had an early first few minutes against Sane, and it looked like City were going to try and target him, much like Rashford did for United at Old Trafford. But he recovered very quickly and was absolutely outstanding. And again, Andy Robertson on the opposite side, he had to be patient this season. I think it was an injury to Moreno before he came into the team, sort of early December time, and he's not looked back, and he was excellent.
Yeah, he's been absolutely
really good. But you can also see the sort of the sort of air of authority that Van Dijk has brought to their back line. Lovren looked a far
looks a far better player with Van Dijk next to him, and he's constantly marshalling and organising and telling people to keep their heads. And I think it was just an outstanding all round team performance.
Yeah, the fullbacks really impressed, and I actually backed Leroy Sané to score at any time, as you said, because he was up against Alexander-Arnold. I thought he'd have the better of that duel, but he I can't name one time he actually got past him. He had bits and pieces of quality, but ultimately not enough. But the imbalance of playing Laporte behind him and then on the other side not having a right winger, they were lopsided, but not even wasn't even a one-sided lopsided. They were almost central heavy.
Yeah, exactly. And Laporte played against Everton at left back, but you know, he's a centre half, and obviously with Mendy being injured this season, they've had to improvise at left back. But you know, Dell and Zinchenko have, as makeshift left backs, had a far more practice of it, and far more practice playing in that team in that position at it. I just thought it was odd not to play Zinchenko. Yeah, I can understand. You know, he's attacking field by nature defensively. He's been, you know, some occasions where he's been caught. But unless Delph really was only fit enough for the bench, I thought it was an odd one not to start him at left back.
Yeah, I certainly think we'll be seeing one of them at left back in the second leg.
Yes, I would think so, yeah.
Yeah. Looking ahead to the weekend then, and for Man City, there's no time to dwell and be negative, because they can win the league if they beat Man United. They're 10-11 to win the match. The draw is 13-5. Man United are 3-1. Obviously, you've covered both sides extensively, James. What do you think will happen at the weekend? Are Man City going to lift this Premier League trophy? It's been talked about for so long that this could be the game that they do it in. They've won so many games recently that, of course, it has come to be that it is in their hands to do it. Right now, they don't need to do it. Derek was saying that earlier on the podcast, that if they don't, then, you know, nuss get off their nose, they'll just do it next week. But they'd love to, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I think they would. I mean, look, they could go from real deflation to elation in a matter of days. And I think, look, they've got plenty of other opportunities to do it. I think for the fans, the prospect of beating United to move 19 points clear at the top and win the title that day is the sort of stuff of dreams. I mean, they spent so long in that their neighbour's sort of shadow pre the Abu Dhabi takeover that, you know, these moments are to be milked, and I think they will be desperate for them to do the job on the day. Can they? It'll be interesting to see what team he puts out. I think Guardiola had indicated before Liverpool that he was planning on making changes. If that happens, it could play into United's hands. I think United will be desperate to avoid the embarrassment, really, of City winning against them. But you know, we could see a substantial number of changes, which might make a difference. I would sort of argue that after a defeat as disappointing as quite shocking as that Liverpool one, if they then go and lose to United and don't win the title, you know, what does that do for momentum going into a key second leg? I can understand the desire to rest players or to, you know, moreover to avoid the prospect of injury to key personnel. But those players are accustomed to playing every 3-4 days. You know, I mean, for De Bruyne, it's no skin off his nose. He does it all the time. Mm. David Silva, you know, all these players. So I think there is a lot to be said, and there's real currency in them going out and trying to win that game. And I think as well, I mean, you know, they've got it's not like post Liverpool they have to be bang up for the Spurs game, and they have to be, you know, they've got multiple games left to win that title, you know, and there'll be so much adrenaline around the Liverpool game that I don't suspect tiredness will be the biggest issue that night. So, you know, would a defeat against United and the sort of title party being delayed, could that have a negative impact going to Tuesday? Possibly. I mean, I would sort of put a team out very much, I mean, clearly I'd put a team out to win the game, but, you know, I'd still put a strong side out.
Yeah.
And you know, and go and win it and finish it off. And clearly, obviously, for United, it's a galling prospect, and one Mourinho and his players will be absolutely desperate to avoid.
Yeah. I mean, Derek mentioned earlier the fact that it could just be a real sort of party-pooping performance from Manchester United. It's a must-not-lose game for them. They'll take a draw here. They'll happily frustrate their rivals from across the city. And it may well be a hollow victory, if you like, because Man City will win the league title at some point. But
it will absolutely be a hollow victory. I mean, all the, you know, we expected the Guardiola-Mourinho rivalry to be, you know, we were all hoping for round two after Real Madrid-Barcelona. And, you know, Guardiola has left Mourinho and the rest dead this season.
It's, yeah.
You know, I mean, the gulf has been huge. You know, I don't think anyone's got any great expectation of Mourinho going, breaking habit of a lifetime and going for the jugular at the Etihad against City. I mean, has Klopp given them a template? I mean, there's plenty of players plenty of teams who cannot play the way Liverpool do, but United have players who can. United absolutely have a front six capable of doing that sort of job, those sort of duties. But will they do it? I mean, it'd be nice for them. It would be nice to see. It would be nice for them for going for City's throat and trying to take the game to them. But I don't see that happening.
No, it would be certainly going against everything that they've done under Mourinho since he joined, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It would, and probably a draw will satisfy them. I mean, they're going to finish in the top four. You know, it's a game they'll desperately, you know, not want to lose, and a clear Liverpool want to win. But I think you know, averting a sort of City title party would probably satisfy them.
Okay. So, in a word, James, do Man City win the title this weekend?
No.
Okay.
I think it'll be a draw.
Do Man City qualify for the semi-finals of the Champions League on Tuesday?
I might put money on them, but my gut says no. I mean, I think it'll certainly be interesting if they score early. But the reality is they have got to go and chase the game, and they've got to score, and that will leave spaces for Liverpool to exploit. And they are absolutely perfectly set up and placed to exploit that situation. And the reality is they score once, City need five.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, even if City get a couple of goals and they're chasing, you know, there will be space, and you'd back Liverpool to score. So, you know, City will score. I suspect it will be a very different performance from what you saw last night, but I just think that the manner of it is that they will leave spaces, and it'd be very difficult to prevent Liverpool scoring on the night. And I think even when you look back to the 5-0, in the season, you know, Liverpool had chances before Mane got sent off. It was a very open game, and they played well. You know, Salah missed a chance or two. So, you know, it's all in Liverpool's favour, absolutely.
Okay, so we're going for a draw at the weekend, and maybe a speculative punt. Man City are 5-1 to qualify, by the way.
Yeah, I can see City winning the game, but
yeah, they're 4-7 to win the game. But
I see them going out.
Yeah,
I just think Liverpool will score. If City are going for the jugular, I think Liverpool will score on the break.
Okay, well, great talking to you, James. Thanks very much for getting in touch.
Pleasure.
And good luck with your Manchester exploits in the coming weeks.
Thank you very much.
And hopefully we'll speak to you soon.
Sure, will do.
So we got hold of James Ducker eventually, thanks to him, and thanks to Derek McGovern and Andy Excel earlier on the podcast. You've already heard from Sam Norris with his Euro nap, and now you're going to hear from Pete Farries, Gav Puchalowski and Al Ross to round off this edition of the Punt Podcast with their best bets in the Championship, League One and League Two. Very best luck with your bets this weekend, listeners. And we'll speak to you soon. Here's Pete.
Hi, my name's Pete Farries, and my nap in the Championship this week is a very obvious one. Millwall are 23-20, they've not lost in the league since New Year's Day, and yes, they were disappointing in terms of not beating Ipswich back on Easter Monday, but ultimately, don't care about that. Millwall are absolutely the play. Bristol City haven't won away from home in the league since victory at Bramall Lane back on the 8th of December, and those fantastic cup runs appear now to be taking a bit of a toll on Bristol City's away form. So for me, Millwall are absolutely the play, one of the form teams of the Championship, and odds against at home, which is always a difficult place to go, looks very good indeed to me. It's quick, it's simple, it's easy, but I think it's obvious. My nap of the week in the Championship is Millwall. Let's hear from Gav Puszczalowski and his thoughts on League One.
My League One nap this weekend. I'm going to give you 3 seconds to guess which side it actually is. 3, 2, 1. Is it Plymouth, I hear you cry, at home to Peterborough? Yes, it is. And for the third consecutive weekend, I am playing Plymouth 29-20 at home to Peterborough. They are. And Plymouth at home have won the last 6 games straight, scoring 2s and 4s and 3s and 4s. They've actually won 11 in 12 at home park. And while ever the traders give me prices of 29-20 for them to win at home, at home park, I'm prepared to play them. Peterborough on their travels, not that many defeats in fairness, but not that many victories either. 1 win in 7 on their travels, 3 wins in 15. And if Plymouth win this game, they'll go above Peterborough, they'll go into the playoffs above Peterborough, and they'll still have a game in hand on Peterborough. Plymouth 29-20 at home is my nap again. Looking at League 2, here's Al Ross.
If you've written Accrington 8-5 down as your League 2 nap, you can't be going too far wrong. A team that's registered 6 straight wins, 54 points from a possible 58. They shouldn't be anywhere near odds against, so fine. But even though I might regret this, they are not this week's nap. I'm napping the team that's second bottom. Yep. Chesterfield 13-5. They're at a Grimsby side in a relegation 6-pointer. Now, while Accrington have dropped 4 points since December the 30th, Grimsby have only won 4 points since the same date, and they played a game more in that time, and Grimsby are evens. Even money for a side with no wins in 20 is even more insane than Accrington's price of 8-5. 41-year-old Grimsby manager Michael Jolly, the Cambridge graduate, former financial trader who has no professional playing career, has used 21 different starting players in his 5 games in charge so far. A 2-1 defeat at Wickham last time looks like some kind of progress, but 6 shots on target to 2, and Grimsby keeper James McKeown roundly being acknowledged as man of the match, that tells a very different story. Putting up a case for Chesterfield, that's slightly harder than making one against Grimsby. They did lose 2-1 to 10-man Port Vale last time out, but the red card in that match, the only big decision that went Chesterfield's way, and they did have the better of the game. And most importantly, and unlike Grimsby, they have won games in the last 20 attempts, 6 of them, 4 in the last 11, 2 in the last 5. They'll still be in the drop zone if they win, but 1 point behind Grimsby and with 3 games in hand. So here's the upshot. Grimsby, 4 points from 20 games. Chesterfield, 4 points from 3. And Chesterfield are 13-5.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.